Welcome back. Our guest this week is the former Republican chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee, Rick Jones. Our lead story, the Supreme Court takes arguments on whether the legislature can change a petition drive. On the OTR panel, Jonathan Osteen, Lauren Gibbons, and Rick Pluto. Sit in with us as we get the inside out, off the record.
Production of Off the Record is made possible in part by a grant from Vanguard Public Affairs. With nearly three decades of experience providing strategic counsel to leaders in the public, philanthropic, and private sectors, Vanguard Public Affairs specializes in digital communications, issue management, public affairs, and reputation management services for communities, organizations, and leaders across the Midwest. Information at vanguard-pa.com. And now, this edition of Off the Record with Tim Skubick.
Thank you very much. Welcome to Off the Record in the middle of a hot summer. The Supreme Court taking oral arguments in an advisory opinion on whether the legislature can change a petition drive. What the heck is that all about?
Yeah, so actually the Republican-led legislature is asking the Supreme Court to say whether it acted constitutionally last year when it adopted and then quickly amended the paid sick leave and minimum wage petition drive. So the issue is whether that can be done in the same two-year session. The state constitution is actually silent on that question. So there was a lot of debate going back as far as the Constitutional Convention, talking about what folks' intentions were for that provision allowing citizens to petition their government to initiate legislation.
And there are kind of several threads to this, argument. One of them is, can you do it in the same session, or do you have to wait until another one? Another one, and this one was kind of interesting, that, was this a bait and switch on the part of the legislature? And I think that's going to be a critical question here, because the justices seemed very interested, at least some of them, in, maybe the legislature acted with ill intent, but is it the job of the Supreme Court to read the minds of all of those people as they voted on that particular question?
Now you're in dicey waters.
I think that intent question is a really big part of this, because especially with term limits, we had such big turnover. It's hard to say with a new legislature in town whether, what the intent was. A lot of them are gone. So
although you could argue the same question, whether it's a veteran legislature or a new legislature, that legislators individually have lots of reasons why, lots of different reasons about why they vote on things. And I think that that's the thicket that the primary thicket that
sure,
the court's going to have to work through.
Sure, there was a lot of debate over, funny language, how thwarty was this?
Yeah,
that was awesome.
How much thwarting of the will of the people was going on here? Republicans will say that, they changed these laws significantly, but they thought they were doing the right thing to make them more business friendly, to not hurt the economy and things like that.
We're talking here about the minimum wage and the sick time thing, which are very sacred issues.
Right.
Yeah, for the labor movement. Okay, and here's what happened: the people passed the petitions, sent it to the legislature. They had 40 days to pass it, and the question is, could they change it and amend it?
And there were some arguments that say, how thwarty it was doesn't matter. The issue here is, if you allow this to happen, would it happen again and again and again?
Well, what's Pandora's the sense of having a petition drive?
What is the point? Yeah. Justice Markman actually said that. If you are allowed to have this pantomime of adopting a petition just to quickly amend it, what is the point of it all? He actually said in court. I thought that was a telling moment.
They also were talking about the people who are arguing that, yes, this is constitutional, are saying there's three other options. You can referendum, you can change the Constitution, or you can vote your lawmaker out.
Yeah.
All those are very expensive, right?
An immediate remedy either.
Right. That's years of planning and prep time and thousands and thousands of dollars.
So voters can punish the legislature for what they did, but
2 years later.
What do you do in the here and now?
I got to tell you, I was a bit surprised the court even took this under advisement as an advisory opinion, because whatever they say, it opens the door to lawsuits, which means this is going to be litigated for the next couple of years. Yes.
Well, yeah, they don't have to issue an advisory opinion, even though they heard oral arguments, and there's a potential that they won't. But at the same time, this issue is going to reach them either way, probably. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a lawsuit, regardless of what they say here, I would imagine.
And so here they are ruling on something.
But here's another menacing potential outcome that's hanging out there, which is, will the court, should it decide to issue this advisory opinion, issue one with a substantial majority that provides clear guidance, or, and I was thinking about this as I was watching, you know, all the different lines of questioning, will we see the court issue advisory opinions with concurrences and different minority opinions that won't leave the legislature or the public with clear guidance?
Sure.
As to what's going on. And I think that's one of the challenges that's going to be facing the Chief Justice as she grapples with this.
Of course. Right. The cleanest outcome here is that the Supreme Court does provide some sort of guidance to at least tell the legislature whether it can do this again or not while the lawsuit over this particular action last year
plays
out.
Yeah, but then what does the lower court do, having seen this advisory opinion? What does it do, rule against the Supremes? Right. And say, hey, they got it wrong?
Well, that's the question, because the point of an advisory opinion is, should this question reach the court, here is the likely outcome. And that gets back to, you know, what happens if we get just a panoply of a small majority and a bunch of concurrences that sort of resolves this particular question.
Which brings me back to my original point, why they took this under advisement in the first place.
Yeah, even if this advisory opinion comes out, as they've said, the lawsuits are probably coming. But it's such a thorny issue at this point. This law has already been enacted. At what point would the lawmakers have to go back and change those minimum wage and paid sick time laws? It's still up in the air.
Can the judicial branch order the
right.
legislature
to do.
Now we got another lawsuit.
An advisory opinion,
yes.
Especially.
Right. A non-binding.
Right. Well, you guys were sitting in court for 2 hours. I was at the Ionia Free Fair with none other than Governor Whitmer. Here's what she had to say. It was Governor's Day at the Ionia Free Fair, and Governor Whitmer was working the crowd. Meanwhile, back in Washington, it was week two of President Trump versus four female congresspersons, including Detroit Democratic Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib.
I called Congresswoman Tlaib and told her I support her 100%.
President Trump's supporters defend his remarks aimed at the women, saying that they were not racist. The governor disagrees.
Obviously, those tweets are racist and so destructive. And I think it's deplorable, the tweets.
Meanwhile, back home on the Pipeline 5 controversy, which continues, the governor reports there are no negotiations ongoing with Enbridge to build a tunnel for that pipeline. Dana Nessel, the attorney general, on June 27th filed a lawsuit against the company seeking to shut the line down, quote, as soon as possible. But did Governor Whitmer support Ms. Nessel's decision?
Do you support Ms. Nessel's move?
You know what? The Attorney General has her own independent authority on this.
Did she ask you if you wanted to sign off on that?
We've had a lot of ongoing conversations.
So did you support that move?
You know what? I support Dana using every ounce of power she has to do what she thinks is the right thing.
The governor says she's also continuing her work to resolve the state budget with Republicans. Mr. Pluta, did she answer the question?
Sort of. No, yes, she did answer the question. And actually,
well,
after
gave
that
an answer to a question.
After that particular exchange, I circled back and checked with her office. And because one of the things I wondered is, are we seeing a little bit of a tough cop? Well, or, but also tough cop,
good
tougher
cop,
cop which
yeah.
is that, sure. you know, you can negotiate with the Whitmer administration or face the
right.
Attorney General.
I think that's
right. And face the Attorney General in court. And I, you know, the answer was, you know, no, that we do our thing and she does her thing. But nevertheless, you know, that there does seem to be an element of that going on here.
Well, look, they obviously, the press releases are timed to come out at the same time. They're not like
no idea what you're talking
they're,
about.
They're on the same page. Mm-hmm. I think you're absolutely right. I think Whitmer is leaving the door open for some negotiation by not wholeheartedly backing Nessel in this play. But
I support her in what she thinks is the right thing to do. I thought was the key answer there. What she thinks, not what I think. Am I right or wrong?
It pains me to agree with you, but
yeah, that's a terrible thing.
Okay,
don't make it practice
right.
of that.
It wasn't a full-throated yes, but it was saying, you know, I back whatever you're doing, and I think that's a pretty key difference between. between, you know, someone brought up the Snyder-Schuette dynamic. This is a lot different than the Snyder-Schuette dynamic.
She clearly was dancing.
Whitmer was dancing, but she's not saying that she's wrong.
And Whitmer, she's got some moves, you know?
Yeah.
Whitmer has said for months now that she's worried that a litigation, a legal battle is going to take 10 plus years, longer than it would take to build a pipeline tunnel under most
scenarios. She's made
it clear
she doesn't want to go that route.
But yet there's no talks going on. I thought, when I asked that question, I picked up some chatter that maybe there was some overtures back, but apparently it's crickets.
Mm. Huh? And Bridge, you go sit in your room and think about what you've done, and when I'm ready, I will call you down.
Yeah, all right. So, but the other part of this with the Tlaib story, is this story getting legs, or is this when another shiny object comes along, as it fade into the woodwork?
Well, it's certainly getting legs. I mean, the president is...
he's not letting go.
He's standing his ground, and he is, in fact, firing up his base. You know, we've seen him before use the sort of othering technique to whip his supporters into a frenzy. We saw that last night. He had a rally in North Carolina, and people were actually shouting, send her home, about Ilhan Omar, representative. I'm not specifically Rashida Tlaib, but his comments have...
We should point out U.S. citizens.
You know, sure. Only
two out of the three born in the United States. The other one came to the U.S. as a child.
I think it's really, this whole situation has really raised the profile of Congresswoman Tlaib even more. You know, she came in pretty hot with some comments about the president. She's consistently called for Trump's impeachment. But to be on this, you know, global scale of being the focus of the President Trump's ire has really raised her profile in addition to the other congresswomen involved.
It's raised her profile, although it is causing the House, and I mean U.S. House, Democratic leadership some heartburn, and, you know, on the Republican, you know, side as well. But it's not hurting Rashida Tlaib personally. I mean, I don't remember the exact number,
but playing back in Detroit.
Her district is, according to Cooks, I don't remember the exact number, but it's a D plus in the double digits. So there's a natural Democratic advantage, and all that does is solidify her base. The question is, you know, from the standpoint of winning more House votes in order to pursue an anti-Trump agenda, is how does that play in districts that are more, you know, swing and
like
persuadable.
Let's remember,
like Alyssa Slotkin, exactly.
Let's remember Trump's original tweet was an attempt to sort of sow discord or foment discord in the House Democratic Caucus.
Bingo.
He was trying to side with Nancy Pelosi, essentially, and say, you know, these are bad apples.
Let's put that in quotation marks.
Sure, but what happened instead is, you know, had sort of the opposite effect. It's actually unified House Democrats, I think, somewhat
Here's
coming out of
that. Here's a conundrum for the governor. One of the remarks we didn't put in that bite was that, look at... The people want to focus on solving problems, the Whitmer message. We want to solve problems. So this is a distraction, but yet it's a distraction that she cannot ignore when asked, because this hits to the very soul of the Democratic Party on this whole race issue.
Well, we were talking earlier about Rick Snyder, and that, you know, seems an awful lot of, you know, I'm going to focus on relentless positive action and not these not these distractions.
And won't endorse in the presidential race, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Not yet.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Anything else?
Yeah, I think that this, as was mentioned before, will continue to have legs. President Trump is not backing down on this subject. You're seeing all kinds of comments coming out of other GOP lawmakers. So it's not something that is going to be let go. I would imagine this is going to continue.
One more thing, though, and I think this is significant, that what we are seeing on, you know, from the words and actions in the D column and the R column is it seems like Republicans and Democrats are treating Michigan like a state that's in play.
You had some Republicans in the Michigan congressional delegation, what was it, three, I think, if we counted Mosh, okay? Upton said something. And Huizinga said something.
Paul Mitchell did as well.
And Paul Mitchell did as well, and they were critical of the president.
But Fred Upton went the furthest.
He voted for that resolution.
Yeah. The others said no. All right, let's call in Rick Jones. Senator, come on in, man.
Republican Rick Jones was term limited out of his Senate job as Judiciary Chair, and with 33 years in law enforcement, he is now about to run for sheriff, a post that he held before entering the legislature. He holds a degree in criminal justice from MSU. He also served in the Michigan House before he won that seat in the Senate and served there for 8 years. So, Senator, is there life after?
I've had a great life after.
Beautiful. All right, let's see if Lauren can.
Senator, you're running for sheriff again. What are some new challenges that you're anticipating? You've been out of it for 14 years. What's this new election cycle going to be like for you?
Well, it's going to be enjoyable. I've offered to do it for less than half of what the current man makes. I said I will actually go to work for $50,000 because I want to come back and fix the problems. I actually had to change state law because of the actions or inactions of the sheriff. And it was nicknamed the bad cop law or the gypsy cop law in the media. He had an officer who assaulted a citizen, a violent arrest. Prosecutor looked at it, threw it out. He called the man in and he said, just resign, I don't need the bad publicity. What he should have done is submitted the report to the prosecutor to see if there should have been actions taken. I believe that was malfeasance.
Is there a problem in law enforcement, in your bailiwick that you're seeing is you run for this again, that some of the problems that we're seeing around the country with law enforcement are becoming localized in the same way that we seem to be seeing so many other issues being looked at through the national lens?
Well, I think the problem is training. We have to have proper training to de-escalate violent situations. I want my deputies to have the best training available.
Is that a yes or a no on the elections being federalized?
I think not at all in Eaton County. I think people are concerned about Eaton County issues. The federal election is totally separate.
If you were still in the Senate, would you vote for legislation to let everybody behind bars on simple marijuana charges, let them go?
Are you talking about the convicted ones getting
the ones that are in the slammer right now?
If we're talking about convictions for simple possession, I would have no objection to those being erased. I don't believe we have anybody in jail now for just simple possession. They're in there for selling.
So there's a difference between selling and simple possession.
Absolutely. If you're sitting in front of a school selling dope to kids, I consider that much more serious than somebody that's a user.
What if you've got a commercial transaction between adults or teenagers who are friends?
Well,
that's not the same as selling in front of a school, and that's a lot of the people that we're talking about in this situation.
Again, the law has just changed. We're going to have a lot of new issues that are going to come up. But I don't object if somebody was simply convicted of a misdemeanor, simple possession, that be erased. We need to get people back to work. We don't have enough people applying for Michigan jobs. We have so many jobs out there.
Senator, obviously there's been nationally a lot of talk about police and community relationships. Right down the street in Lansing, we had not too long ago an officer filmed, appeared to be striking a teenager getting into as she tried to place the teenager into a police vehicle. It appears from body cam footage the officer was striking her on her leg, trying to get her leg into the vehicle. She was propping open the door. It's caused a lot of tension in the local community here. The officer, maybe officers, have been put on paid leave. What do you make of that situation as a law enforcement official yourself in the past? What do you make of the actions by the police officers?
I was asked to come in to a local TV channel as an expert witness, and I viewed all the body cam, not a simple street film that somebody made off an iPhone. And if you look at the body cam video, you see very clearly the female officer did not strike the young lady in the face or the head or the stomach. She struck her only in the top of the thigh that she was trained to do. This is after the officer was kicked in the chest and she was kicking the car door, and it would not come under arrest.
She must have hit her 20 times in the thigh.
Is that a standard practice to strike in the thigh? Just explain that, please.
Actually, the police chief came out on local media and said she was trained to strike on the top of the thigh to get her to bend her leg and put it in the car and not kick the officer, not kick the door.
Is there a limit to the number of strikes?
I believe, after viewing
when you saw the video, how many strikes were there, sir?
I think there were 9. They didn't look like they were even that hard.
And the point you said is to bend the leg.
Yes, the point is to use the least amount of force necessary to get the person to cooperate. Now, she could have gone to pepper spray. She would have been criticized for that. So she used the least amount of force. And what's important is she was trained to do this. So I have to ask, Mayor, how come the officers are still off street duty? What's going on here? Why haven't we had a hearing? They did what they were trained to do. What's going on? We just had the police chief resign.
Do you think the training should be different, though? A lot of people in Lansing were very concerned with some of the tactics that were used. Is the training the problem?
Well, I would ask the people that are concerned, what would you do differently? Would you have used pepper spray? As the neighborhood closed in on the car, could it have gotten more violent? Was it appropriate to take that action to make the arrest quick and get the situation taken care of before it got more violent?
If you were chief, you'd have put him back on the job.
If I were chief or their sheriff, they would be back on the job now.
And prior to a hearing or prior to a resolution?
No. This has gone dragged on. I would have had a very thorough investigation, then I would have had a hearing, and with what I know, they would have been back on the job.
Go ahead.
What would because there's clearly a lot of consternation in the community about how this was handled, whether it's actual or an issue of perception. What went wrong from your vantage point?
What went wrong is somebody used a cell phone to put a video on social media and it went viral. And it appears that she's striking the young lady in the face. That's not what happened when you look at the body cam footage. And unfortunately, I think people are making political decisions instead of a decision on were the officers right. If they were right, let's put them back on duty.
So what policies should there be in place to ensure that something like this doesn't happen in the Lansing Police Department and others?
I'm always an advocate for more training, for de-escalating possible violent situations. I think the mayor should come out and say she did exactly what she was trained. The officers are back on duty, but we're going to have additional training for de-escalation.
How would you handle a situation if something came up under your watch, if you're elected to sheriff? How would you handle a situation where you see a video and you believe that the officers did the right thing, but a lot of community members believe something different, that they're concerned with how it was handled? How would you handle a situation like that if it came up?
It did come up. I had two officers that were called to a local bar. A man was destroying the bar. He heard the sirens, he got in his car and was attempting to leave. They blocked him in. The only thing they could do was to break his window and take him out of the car and put him under arrest. He was handcuffed, he turned blue, and he died. The officers unhandcuffed him. They then did CPR, did everything they could do to save him. And the perception was immediately, officers have killed this man. But we got the video, and we showed it to the public, and we showed it to the family. And there was no lawsuit because the officers did what they had to do, and we found with the autopsy the man's heart was full of cocaine.
Senator, if you're a sheriff, will you aggressively enforce the law vis-a-vis people driving under the influence of marijuana in their cars? Or is that just too labor-intensive to police?
We need some legislation. I worked on legislation allowing the saliva test. The state police are in their second year of using it. So just like the portable breathalyzer, they can stop you, read you your rights, do a simple saliva test, and they will know.
Is it reliable?
I believe the state police are proving it is reliable. The science is there. But I also believe that the legislature ought to look at how much can be in the bloodstream. Right now, it's zero tolerance. You can't have anything in your bloodstream. So I think it should be comparable to the alcohol law. I don't want to jail somebody because they smoked a long time ago.
Is there an acceptable level of, just like with the alcohol law, is there an acceptable level of THC? Or is there any science behind that?
Not that I'm aware of. So I would ask the University of Michigan or Wayne State or MSU to do studies and advise the legislature on where should it be set.
Senator, did your term in the State House overlap with Rashida Tlaib at all?
Yes.
What do you make of the president's comments that she and other women of color in Congress should go back to where they came from?
I don't pay attention to tweets. I personally don't tweet. I don't listen to the rhetoric of President Trump, and I don't listen to the rhetoric of AOC.
But you're aware of
it. I'm concerned of local issues. I can tell you that in the coffee shop today at 5:30, and every day I go to the coffee shop, talk to local people, they're concerned about, are they going to get 45 cents gas tax?
Senator, they're not concerned. This is the only coffee shop where no one is talking about those things.
Nobody talks about...
You found it.
I'm telling you, nobody talks about
Senator,
Trump.
Did you vote for President Trump?
I did.
Okay. Is there anything that he has said so far that has offended you?
He says many things that I wouldn't say. But what I look at is, are all of my constituents of Eaton County, are they employed? Do they have good jobs?
I look at results. All right, is there anything in this exchange that offended you?
I don't like it. I wouldn't have said it. But again, I look at results, and that's what all of my folks in the coffee shop look at. Does my grandson or does my son have a job? Can my daughter find a job, or do they have to move to Texas? Because I can tell you, years ago, that's what it was. Right now, Michigan has more jobs than we have people.
Senator, got to get out of here. You didn't vote for Gretchen Whitmer, right?
No.
You did not. Okay. I just wanted to make that clear. Thanks to all of you for showing up. See you next week right here on Off the Record.
Production of Off the Record is made possible in part by a grant from Vanguard Public Affairs. With nearly three decades of experience providing strategic counsel to leaders in the public, philanthropic, and private sectors, Vanguard Public Affairs specializes in digital communications, issue management, public affairs, and reputation management services for communities, organizations, and leaders across the Midwest. Information at vanguard-pa.com. For more Off the Record, visit WKAR.org. Michigan Public Television stations have contributed to the production costs of Off the Record with Tim Skubick.